I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to Deep Dish Radio. I'm Tim Powers. Boy, our social media has really taken off. Thanks to everybody who's followed us on Twitter, at Deep Dish Radio. And, of course, our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/deepdishradio. Thanks, everybody. We really appreciate it. Our hotline, if you'd like to send us voicemail, is 865-4 Tim says 8654 Tim SAYS. So you can leave me voicemail there. And thanks to everybody who has emailed us. We love getting emails and we'd love to read your email right on the show. Email us at DDR for Deep Dish Radio. DDR@email.com. I'd like to thank Jack and Linda from Asheville, North Carolina for their very kind words. And of course, thanks to Ron and Joy in St. Louis for their kind support and their encouragement. Always good to hear from good listeners. My guest today is Mike Montali. He's a songwriter and the de facto leader of a hot new band out of the Bronx, New York, called Hollis Brown. I've been really impressed with Mike's music and the tremendous skill that the band has. Wow. Listeners to the show know that I believe rock and roll died with John Lennon, and if not then, with Jerry Garcia. But Hollis Brown appeared on my radar, and I am happy to call them the last great rock and roll band. You'll dig their stuff, and I'll play one of their songs after my interview with Mike Montali. Hollis Brown right now is on tour with Counting Crows, as well as club dates all over the U.S., so you better get ready. They may be coming to your town. And they're headed to Europe in the later part of 2015 with Counting Crows. Their latest album, Three Shots, is something you should buy at your local record store as soon as you can. And if that's not fast enough, get it on iTunes or wherever you buy your music. Just get it. You'll be doing yourself a favor. The album is called Three Shots. It's new from Hollis Brown, and it, my friends, is a very, very good rock and roll album. Here's Mike Montali on Deep Dish Radio.
Subscribe today and tell a friend about Deep Dish Podcast with Tim Powers, with Tim Powers.
It's a dopey place to start, but Hollis Brown is joining the ranks of bands named for people like Molly Hatchet and Jethro Tull. So how often,
yeah, I guess so.
How often do promoters ask which one's Hollis?
Well, you know, it's kind of like the which one's Pink,
right.
Pink Floyd type of thing. Everybody, it's not as many promoters, you'd be surprised, but as just random people will say, hey, are you Hollis? Are you Hollis? I say, no, you know.
you're going to end up like Alice Cooper.
You know, in hindsight, it's weird because we always try and say we're a band, not a man, you know, because we picked the name kind of like as a cohesive thing where you can have a group of people who also have this one defining either sound or identity and all that. But
right.
Maybe it's backfiring. I don't know.
I don't know. Nobody looks at Eric Idle and says, which one of you guys is Monty, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You guys really you work at presenting yourself as a self-contained unit, you know, an old school self-contained band. Sing, you know, song, you write your own stuff. You don't do a lot of covers, except for one album that's entirely covers. But
Yeah, we did a whole covers record, man.
Right. Which is
we do. Well, we're really fond of songwriting, and we're really like, I think me and John in particular, both individually and collectively, we strive to create something that's really solid from a songwriter standpoint. So I think original music to us is really the thing, you know? I mean, we love playing other people's stuff and doing covers and all that, but at the end of the day, you know, we'd like to be, I guess, critiqued or evaluated on our original music. So it's really important to us to be able to have that outlet to not, and we are self-contained in the way that we kind of, and the music industry kind of lets you do it nowadays, where you can be self everything by yourself in the way, you know. So we kind of have a lot of control over our artistic ideology, I guess, and I think that's kind of a gift and a curse in different ways, obviously.
Sure.
But we'd like to, you know, that's why we were able to do the Loaded record, where we got to cover the Velvet Underground stuff. But we really want to be held up by the stuff that we write, because we're really passionate about writing music.
Sure. I mean, it seems the conventional wisdom, as I talk to you from Hollywood, is that Hollywood is afraid of new ideas. You know, they're remaking movies for the third and fourth time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you see it every, you know, the Expendables 13 and all this.
Right.
It's so weird, because when you look at, and I'm a huge movie person. I love going to films. I really love cinema. But when you look at a lot of what's, it's all either remakes of stuff that was made really well back, you know, 30, 40 years. I'm waiting for the Godfather to come out. You know what I mean? I think that'll be like the end of it. You know, I'm waiting for Casablanca to be remade, and it's ridiculous. You know?
Or a prequel. Yeah.
But it's also consumption, you know, it's a consumption thing, and a lot of the art industries, like the music business, or if you look at even the film world, it's a lot for a studio or a record label or blah, 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 to take a big chance on something. You know, my favorite movie of last year was probably Whiplash. I love that movie. That was a great movie.
Right.
You know, it was, but that's not a movie that people are going to put a lot of money into, because it's not going to have a big return. It's artistically incredible. And I don't know, maybe Bert, there were a lot of good, there's always been a couple good in the movie. Birdman was a good one.
Right.
There's been a lot of, but those movies aren't, you know, there's not a lot of money in, but Mission Impossible, you know, 32 with Tom Cruise still going.
Right.
Or James Bond or all this stuff. That's, and the same thing is with the reggae, you know, Taylor Swift or Beyonce, it's just an easy bet for them to be able to hit their quota, and that's like everything that's wrong in the whole thing, you know?
Right. So you guys come along.
Not to say that I'm not anti major label. I'm or anything like that. I just think that art is tricky in that way, you know?
Right. Because it's got to be challenging. You could come out and say you cover some CCR song. I don't know why I picked them, but let's, you know, you do, and that gets people's attention. Like half the Beatles' first album was covers, right?
And sure, the Stones, they were all doing Chuck Berry,
right? And I mean, I would imagine there's Chuck Berry in your repertoire, but you know, you guys are presenting yourselves right out of the starting block as a songwriter-based band, which is commendable, and the songs are great, but it's got to come with some challenges, man.
Sure it does, yeah, you know, but I feel like it's all relative, I guess. I mean, bands even, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, they all had, I think, equal challenges, just in a different way. I mean, it's hard, it's historically really hard to be a band that has original stuff, new ideas, and does everything themselves, you know, in any time period.
Yeah.
But sometimes those can be the ones that make the difference, you know?
Yeah. Like the guy that was on my show last week was Larry Tamblyn from the Standells, right? The Dirty Water.
Oh, yeah.
And he told some stories about, you know, how they had an image of what the Standells would be. They got signed to a label, and one of their producers was Sonny Bono. and he starts to build this big wall of sound around this garage punk band, and they're like, no, that's not us. Move on. And they maintain their integrity, you know? And now here they are 50 years later, still rocking. It's great.
So, I mean,
you know, I've known about you guys for about 3 weeks now, and I knew you were the real deal when I saw you play a D'Angelo EX-175. Tell me about, I mean, and I love those country gentleman looking things. Tell me about how that guitar got to you. Tell me how that guitar got to you, because every guitar has a story when you're as involved as that.
Well, it's funny you say. Yeah, I played the D'Angelico, and I'll tell you, that was the actual guitar that I felt really fit the band in the best way, because I was playing a Les Paul for a while, and predominantly in Hollis Brown, I hold the rhythm down,
right.
You know, and I play a couple solos and stuff, but predominantly I hold the rhythm down,
right,
and which is the hardest thing to do, you know. I think John Lennon said the hardest thing, it's harder to be a great rhythm guitar player than a great lead guitar player.
It's true. Rhythm was my
axe,
too.
Rhythm is something you just have to have in you. You know, a lot of people can learn different lead guitar licks and do that whole thing, but if you want to be a rhythmic player, it's just something that not only takes time to work at, I was playing for a while, I was searching for the right sound for the band and the new material we did on this latest record, Three Shots, and a bunch of stuff, and I wanted a country gentleman. That was my guitar, you know, and I was playing the Gretsch for a little while, and then something about, I'm from New York City, that's where I grew up, and something about D'Angelico, it's all, you know, the story of it, and the thing about the guitar that I'm playing now from D'Angelico was, it's a little extra, because it has a jazz kind of feel to it, D'Angelico's historically are jazz guitars made in New York, and
right.
It gives the pickups, when you're playing rock and roll through it, and with what we're playing with the band, what we do, it gives a little extra gain on the pickups. It kind of gives it a cool, different sound that I hadn't heard in any other guitars. So, and I always wanted a ruby red guitar, and then I got the chance to go to the showroom and hang out with all the guys and all that, and I saw the guitar, and I played it, and I said, okay, this is the one out of all of them.
So she found you.
I've been rocking it, and I think it's a little different, you know, because if I was playing a Gretsch right now, it would still be amazing, because Gretsch are amazing guitars, but it wouldn't have as unique of a tone and a drive that this one does.
Well, and to bring a jazz guitar into a rock and roll setting, you know, it lends something unusual.
But it's weird, because it's not a jazz guitar, though. You know, that's the whole, like, weird thing about it. That was one of the reasons why I love it, and why I did fall in love with it, is because it's not really a jazz guitar. It can cross a lot of different genres and sounds. You can't really pin it down. It's got the rock, it's got the folk, it's got the jazz. It's got a whole, you can do a lot of things with it, you know, and I don't think anyone pushes it as much as we do in the rock genre. You know, a lot of people, when they play the D'Angelico, they're a little more bluesy or R&B and all that. I don't think they go as rock as we do.
Right.
So I think that that's why it gives it its own thing, you know.
And then you contrast that with John, who's either, from what I've seen, is either on a Stratocaster or he's got this awesome Les Paul GT, right, with the devil horns.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And the sounds that you know, when the two sounds combine, it's really, really something. It's great to hear.
Me and John, we have very different guitar styles, you know?
Yeah,
we
you do.
Play very differently on our instruments, so it kind of, it complements each other in a way that people might not expect, you know?
Yeah. Hey, tell me about Bo Diddley.
Huh. I never met him.
You're kidding.
We did a song called Rain Dance on the new record that came out, Three Shots, and it's a track that was done off of an old Bo Diddley demo, actually. So we met a rep from the Bo Diddley estate.
Awesome.
You know. Yeah. We met a rep from the Bo Diddley estate, and we played a show, and she came to the gig, and she said, I got this Bo Diddley stuff that's in the vault. He has so much of this material. And we said, well, you know, we have to hear some of it, you know.
Right.
This is a great, incredible originator and just a wonderful, you know, legend. So you got to send something over, you know, because we're all music guys. So we have to send something over. We got to hear it. And she sent this lo-fi thing over, and we got the guts, I guess, after a little while. I said, hey, what if we add, you know, what if we just get on it and try and do it? And they said, that could be actually kind of cool, you know.
Right. So what was it? Was it a cassette?
Studio.
It was
a track that he sent over. It was instrumental. And actually, he's playing on the song. So
right.
What he sent over, you're actually hearing on the song. It's the guitar. We kept the guitar. It had a bunch of synths and some synth drums and just this kind of cool vibe that we try to preserve. And we kept his guitar, did a lot of work to it. Our producer, Don DeLego, and our John Agnello, who mixed the record, really, really worked with his guitar.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
A lot. Made it sound great. And we got in the studio and we just laid down what we thought would be a kick-ass thing, and it became Rain Dance, and everybody really seemed to like it so much, and we just kept it on the record. You know, it was its own project in its own self. It was like a kind of a crazy collaborative, you know, once in a lifetime, awesome thing, and we just thought we should put it on the album.
And I'm glad you did. It's a great cut. It's a fantastic cut.
Yeah, we didn't know what to do with it. So maybe it'll be a single, or maybe it'll make like a compilation album or something, but we just said, fuck it, let's put it on our album.
Right. You guys have a really, you know, there's a real down and dirty rock and roll sound to this contemporary band coming out of New York. How much influence does New York have on the music of Hollis Brown? You know,
it's a really interesting thing, you know, because it's in our being, you know, both myself and John, it's in us. No matter what we do, we are New Yorkers and we come from here, and that's the place of our birth. Just like if we came from anywhere else, you know, it just happens to be we got this place that was very different from everywhere else.
Right.
And a lot more cultural and a lot more stuff going on. So I think it's deep in us, but also in today's world with the internet and with all this different stuff, you know, you can kind of, you know, before music used to be very regional. So if you were from the South or you were from the West Coast or you were from New York or you were from London or whatever, you sounded a particular way because that was what you were exposed to regionally. But
yeah.
Now everything's wide open, you know, so we can be exposed to things not only from the past, but things that just happened a second ago. So it's kind of, the door is wide open sonically. So I think that New York is definitely in us. And I mean, we did a whole Velvet Underground covers record, which is one of our favorite bands, especially from New York.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. So I guess that's in us, and a lot of our friends and the circles we hang out with, you know, we're New Yorkers, so we're in New York always, and you know, when we're not on tour, and we live there, and we, you know, love there and all that. But I think our sound is also very American more than it is New York. I think we have an American sound in the way that our songs are more heartland and are more rootsy in the true American spirit as opposed to the New York spirit. I'm not saying the New York isn't in there just attitude-wise because that's who we are, but I think our sound is more American than it would be New York.
Kind of a broader sense, yeah. So that New York is real close to where you guys are. But when you and John were growing up, you know, it was still kind of colonial. It was still very regional.
Oh, yeah, very different than it is. That's why when you know, it's so weird because when I think of music from New York, I think of the Ramones. I think of the Velvet Underground. I think of, you know, that's from New York, in the rock world anyway.
Right.
You know, but New York, not the jazz world or a lot of the other different genres, but in the rock and roll world or Simon and Garfunkel, blah, 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 blah. But New York today, when you say, it almost drives me crazy, because when I see in magazines and I see in blogs and stuff, oh, this New York City, it's not that it has a, it just drives me crazy, because it's like, you know, the bands that people think are from New York are not really from New York. You know what I mean?
Well, but you guys
are
right there. But, you know, you sound, the sound is like, you're right. It could pass as a heartland Midwestern kind of band. That's why I think you're going to do great in St. Louis.
Well, our piano player, Adam Bach, is from St. Louis, and our rhythm section is from Cleveland. So we definitely have that Northeast Midwest rock flair, you know?
Yeah. What were the sounds that you and John heard as kids, you know, growing up that directed you to rock
and
roll?
Well, a couple records that we bought. I mean, there's been so many, you know.
Sure,
but
you never forget your first love, man.
Definitely the Loaded. I mean, we did the Loaded record. That was a big record for me and John when we first got together.
Right.
Started hanging out and writing songs. Ziggy Stardust has always been a big one for us. We don't listen to it as much now as we did when we were younger, but Freak Out by Frank Zappa was a record that we bonded over.
Awesome.
Exile on Main Street, you know, just stuff like, you know, there's been quite a few, but I would say those four are probably the ones we got on. Now we've been both listening to a lot of Willie Nelson. We've been listening to, it comes and goes. We have, you know, we have very peculiar taste in music that we seem to be on the same wavelength a lot.
Right. But I mean, good is good, right? So
yeah,
you
exactly.
know, you'll come yeah. in and out of it. I mean, if we were still listening to the same thing that we both listened to when we were 15, you know, you'd
find new things, you try and grow, you get inspired by something new and you want to go that route. You know,
well, speaking of
still
something,
learning.
You actually brought up a really good point when you said with the internet, you know, people's influences, bands' influences, you know, you're not limited by your geography. And, you know, 30, 40 years ago, a band would work real hard to get a record on the radio, then on MTV.
Oh, yeah.
And neither of those are really viable media anymore. So how does a new band get off the ground and get new stuff in front of people? Is it all word of mouth?
Well, it's really hard. Yes, yeah. I mean, I would say yes and no. I mean, it just seems to be a culture in a society that not one thing will do it. Whereas before, if you just got on a late night show or you just got on a, you know, any one of those things, one appearance could break you. I don't think it's that quick and that one thing anymore.
Right.
You know, you kind of have to spread out. So you still have to do all the things. I think you still have to be around, and you know, if you don't have a radio thing, then you're probably not going to do it. You know, if you don't have if you're not getting reviewed, you're probably not going to do it. If you don't have those appearances, you're not going to do it. If you're not on the right tour, if you're not, you just need to do all the things at once and build up to where you have that everything going on all cylinders, which is so hard to do it. Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like you're spinning plates. Comedy is the same way. You know, you used to be able to get a Tonight Show spot and you would be a star the next day. Or
yeah, exactly. It could have been you were banging the booker's niece and all of a sudden, boom, they introduced you and, you know, you got a slot. But and if you were good and if you cut through and impress and so-and-so, you know, the tastemaker world is very different. It's not as powerful as it used to be. It's kind of a different.
Yeah, because it's a double-edged sword. You have direct access to your audience now. There's not some guy sitting behind a desk smoking a cigar going, man, the kids are going to love Hollis Brown, she. You know, but...
But they got to get to you. The guy sitting behind the desk... Well, I think you are right, but I also think if the guy is sitting behind... You still need the guy behind the desk, like it or not, you know?
Yeah.
He just might not be as important as he was.
But he thinks he is.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Some things will never change.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. Well, that's really cool. I I don't endorse
cool, man.
Merch.
Thank you for having me on the show, man.
Of course. Yeah, you know, just if you got a second, a couple real quick, just fun questions. You know, what's the weirdest song that you would want to hear Hollis Brown cover?
Oh boy, that's weird. You know, we always joked that if we played David Letterman when he was around, we would. We never got a chance to, unfortunately, but we always wanted to play It's Raining Men because Paul Schaefer wrote it. So we said, if we ever get there and somebody, and we're going to play It's Raining Men for Paul Schaefer, and we never got a chance to. But
that's hilarious.
That would be the one.
I'd like to hear you guys cover a Lee Hazelwood song. That's cool.
Cool.
Tell me the worst road food story. Every rocker's got a road food story that's horrible.
Road food story?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Food on the road.
Oh, boy. Let me think. Well, I got food poisoning. I'm not going to tell you where because I might get, you know, somebody yep. sue me or something.
I'd bleep it anyway.
It was at the Waffle House. And I got fucking food poisoning. So bleep it out. Bleep it out so I don't
you know. What's funny is I'm gonna bleep Waffle House but not fuck.
But not what? Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the world, you know, going back to what we were talking about. That's the way it is now.
That's really true. Hey,
but yeah, you know, food poisoning there, man, we, you know. This story, we've been hooked up because we've been with the County Crows and Citizen Cope, and all. I mean, it's just been really incredible.
So yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, about touring with the County Crows. I mean, that opens up a big old audience for you, and you're going to be here in L.A.
Yeah,
playing
it's
the
been
Verizon
great. You know, we're doing the whole. Yeah, we're doing the whole country with them, and we get to go to Europe. So, I mean, it's been as great, you know, getting exposed to a bunch of things and a whole new audience, and it's really all we can ask for. So it's been a really good trek.
Fantastic. Do you know what? Do you know what's next after the tour? Got a new album, new tour? Anything?
We're gonna hit the studio. We're gonna hit the studio again. You know, we're on tour until about Thanksgiving, and then we're gonna take a couple weeks to just decompress from because we'll have been out for about 6 months. It'll take like 3 or 4 weeks and just cool down. I'm getting married, gonna go on a honeymoon and just vamp out for a couple weeks, and then we'll get back in the studio, make a new record, hopefully.
Fantastic.
Well, some new recordings, anyway. I don't know if we'll have a whole record, but we'll have something.
Well, when you do, I hope that you will come back to Deep Dish. We love having you, and I am Hollis Brown's newest fan.
Cool,
so, really cool.
All right. Thanks for having me out, brother.
My pleasure. I appreciate it. Stay in touch, and we'll see you when you're in L.A.
All right, yeah. You coming to the gig?
Yeah, man.
Well, we got Hotel Cafe.
Yeah, the Hotel Cafe in October.
And we got Irvine. We're playing at the amphitheater out there, too, with the County Crows. So
yeah, you're going to love that.
Back-to-back nights.